Okay, so this is about 2:31, March 12th. And when I look at the schedule, I was shocked to see that next time is your second exam already. Okay, and so that's going to be on 7, 8, 9, 10, and 11. And we're just going to finish up some things on 11 today. And the best way to study for that exam is to use the study guide, right? So the exam figures, I haven't gone over all the exam figures, but I want to show you a couple good sites online that actually show you these muscles in action. So I think that's going to be really helpful, just to see what these muscles are doing, as opposed just to show you pictures that are in your textbook. Okay, anybody have a question on the schedule? Oh, there is an error on the schedule. What's the error? Yeah, lab practicums are not next week. They're the week after, right? So you don't have practicums. They're going to be on the 24th and 26th, not on the 17th and the 19th. All right, so what do I want to do? I probably want to come over here and show like this. All right, so I'm just in, where, weekly assignments in Blackboard, all right, the weekly assignments button, weekly assignments, and then look at week number 8, will take us to muscles of the body, and we'll click into there, and there are a number of really good links in here. Okay, so the one that's going to be really helpful for you, actually all of these are really good, but let's start with this one here. And it's just getbodysmart.com is the website. And once you get in here, all right, you can pick various things that you'll be using through the semester. So we want to look at muscle system. And here we get to choose where, what part of the region, what region of the body we want to look at. So I tell you what, let's start, if we can find something with head. I don't see a head. They have something in heads. Previous menu. We got to go back one. So is in, go down. More? Okay. Funny, I didn't see it. Ah. Neck and head. Okay. They don't have a whole lot of muscles, but they've got some. Okay. Like scalene, sternocleid, and mastoid, they don't have. Orbicularis. That's really what they had, orbicularis in here. Yeah, it's in a different, where would it be? I don't think this is it. Okay, so you probably see sliding filament mechanism in there. Hmm. Face. Act on the mandible. Let's try this. Okay. So you have to know a bunch of these muscles in lab, but just check your study guide, the picture or the illustration in your study guide for the lecture exam, which ones you have to know. And the only one that is animated on this particular figure is the frontalis. All right, so on this illustration, you probably can get rid of all of these different labels. Where is there? Usually there's a link that says get rid of labels, show labels. Okay, don't see it. All right, but let's look at frontalis, since that is available to us. Ah, here's the list where you can get rid of various things. So this is a nice virtual dissection program, because you can see some muscles that are deep, that are underneath muscles that otherwise you wouldn't be able to see. So I think most of these muscles right here, except for nasalis, procerus, you have to know for lab. So they're not muscles you should know for the lecture exam. The orbicularis palpebrae, you don't have to know, but you have to know orbicularis oculi, that's a circular muscle. What can you tell me about the shape of orbicularis palpebral? Yeah, it's a circular skeletal muscle, right? Just by nomenclature, even though you're not responsible for knowing that one. All right, so what is handy on this website? Well, you get origin and insertion, and then you also get action. So if you look at origin, you see that the Galea aponeurotica is the origin of the frontalis, right? So here is the Galea aponeurotica, and here is the frontalis. The insertion is skin around the eyebrows, here and here. So this is a little bit strange muscle because it's not connecting two bones. It's connecting one bone with soft tissue, right? So it's a muscle of facial expression. All the other muscles we're going to look at are for moving bones around, skeletal muscles, but muscles of facial expression connect to soft tissue. So we know that that muscle raises the eyebrows, like so. And did you see anything move? Okay, so the eyebrows are moving, and as a matter of fact, you could stop it in that motion, and it also wrinkles the forehead, so you can see some wrinkling of the forehead here as well. So this is a pretty good website for looking at muscle actions and origins and insertion. So what happens if I click on insertion, right, then I see the insertion nicely outlined, right, and the origin also nicely outlined. And my guess is that it's two different colors. Is it two different colors? Okay. At least origin and insertion, I can see the letters are two different colors because insertion is blue. But I don't know if you can see the difference right here. All right. So you can use this even to fill in your lab manual. All right. This is really nice. All right. So let's go back and look at some other muscles since we're kind of done with the with facial muscles. Head and neck. Where did we start with head and neck? We started with the sternocleidomastoid, anterior muscles. And that's really where I want to start. Head and neck, act on the back. Where is sternocleidomastoid? I need to get to anterior splenius. All right, I'm sure I've used sternocleidomastoid. Okay, who's been there recently? Mandible. Well, this is maybe, well, it's not in here, but muscles of mastication, right? So we have muscles on the skull for facial expression and mastication. So here is one group for mastication. Masseter, you see right here. So let's take a look at the action of the masseter. You can see it very nice. We can get rid of temporalis. Right, so here is the masseter muscle right there. Okay, origin, zygomatic arch, indeed. And the insertion, lateral surface angle of the mandible. And muscles, of course, can only shorten. So this is going to elevate the mandible. Like so. Okay, so you can practice your definitions of elevation and depression or any kind of different kinds of actions. Temporalis, pretty much the same, elevates the mandible. And you can see the insertion is a little bit different, medial surface of the coronoid process. Ooh, I can't see it. Well, let's get rid of the masseter. Let's get rid of some bones. And there it is. There's the insertion of the temporalis. Right, so you know this is the coronoid process, and then here is the condyloid process, and here's the condyloid surface of the, or condyle of the mandible. And pterygoids. We have only a couple muscles or a couple models in lab that show the pterygoids. And because they're really, really deep, right? They're connected to the pterygoid process of the sphenoid. So certainly we can't see them in this view, but if we get rid of some of these bones, okay, I can see the lateral and medial pterygoid muscles. And if you want to mispronounce it every once in a while to make sure that you don't miss that P when you spell it out, that would be okay with me. Okay, so here's the origin, pterygoid process. The insertion is the condyloid process of the mandible. And this is, so this muscle is going to shorten, so it's going to pull the mandible toward the origin, right, because the insertion is the most movable end. And what do we call that action when your mandible moves forward? That's protraction. All right, click the blue links. Protraction. Like so. Did you see anything move? Yeah, protraction. Okay. Depress the mandible. Okay. Yeah, because it will angulate, depresses. And also, so I like for you to know protract and side to side. So it's important for grinding. Pterygoids are important for grinding. And not a muscle of facial expression, typically. Okay, and let's go back to the other pterygoid. Okay, so again, the origin is the pterygoid process of the sphenoid. And now the insertion is on the medial surface near the angle of the mandible. And this one is not going to depress, it's going to elevate the mandible, like so. And as a matter of fact, for either of those pterygoids, if you want to say elevate the mandible, that's fine with me, even though the lateral does cause depression. But again, this one also protracts, right, and grinds from side to side. So that's the job of the pterygoid muscles. All right, let's look at, did we run into sternocleidomastoid? Not yet, huh? Vertebral column, back, act on the mandible, act on the face. Could it be in here? Nope. All right, let's try here. Yeah, where do you see anterior muscles? But it's, the link is gone right here. And scalenes, so that would be really nice to see anterior muscles. Okay. Well, can you picture where this is? We talked about it last time. We use this as an important muscle to know nomenclature, right? So origin and insertion is given to you in the name of the muscle, so you don't have to memorize that, sternum and clavicle, and the insertion is mastoid process, way up over here, right? But there's something else that we can see on this particular illustration, and that is the antagonistic muscle to the sternocleidomastoid. So remember, the sternocleidomastoid can flex the cervical spine or the neck, causes flexion, or if only one contracts, it causes a rotation. And the antagonistic muscle will be any of the splenius muscles. All right, so I see a couple splenius muscles. We can use either one of these. All right, so here are splenius muscles. Maybe I'm going to go back. Capitis. Okay, so the vertebral column, so this muscle stabilizes the head. It's antagonistic to the sternocleidomastoid. So when the sternocleidomastoid contracts, it's not the sternum and clavicle, it's the head that moves. Same thing for the splenius muscles. Okay, the origin is the vertebral column, of course, because they're posterior, right? They're not anterior to the sternum and clavicle, but it's taking the place of the clavicle and sternum on the posterior part. And the insertion now is on the occipital bone and even the mastoid process. Okay. Origin and insertion, Okay, so nicely antagonistic to the sternocleidomastoid, can laterally flex. Okay, and extend. Where did it say extend? Extension of the head and neck. Okay, so not bending forward, but bringing your head back is extension. Okay. All right, so that shows antagonism with the sternocleidomastoid. Okay, so that's probably all that I want to show you for head and neck. Abdomen. Let's look at the abdomen. Okay, so we have four muscles in the abdomen, and they have different layers, right? One of the most external or superficial is going to be the rectus abdominis. Oh, we did talk about that one last time because that's on your lecture notes, right? So the origin is the pubic crest, the insertion is xiphoid process, and some costal cartilages. And so when those contract, that flexes the vertebral column. That's what I would like for you to know. Compresses the abdomen, that's okay, I guess, for you to know, because that helps in respiration. In particular, expiration, it helps expire air from our lungs. Okay, now we do have some lateral muscles, the external, internal oblique, and the transverse abdominis. Let's see what we got for that. Okay. And again, when they're used bilaterally, it flexes the vertebral column, right? When one contracts on one side, that causes a rotation, like so. And the same thing for the other oblique muscle. Transverse abdominis is the deepest of this whole group. I'm not sure you have to know the origin and insertion of this, but this helps in expiration. Right, so you can see compression of the abdomen. So this helps when you're hyperventilating, when you need to expel a lot of air, not when you're breathing quietly. I don't think I told everybody this, but there are two different ways that you breathe. One is quiet breathing, like what you're doing right now, where the only muscle that you need for inspiration is the diaphragm, right, between the thoracic cavity and abdominal cavity. That contracts and we breathe in, and then to get air out of our lungs to exhale, we only have to relax. Relax the diaphragm and it will go back up to its original location. That forces air out of the lungs and also the elasticity of the lungs itself. So when you expand the lungs, that stretches all the elastic proteins within the lungs, and then when you relax, those elastic proteins then make the lungs shrink back down, which causes exhalation. So inspiration is due to one muscle for quiet breathing, and expiration is completely passive. Now when you're hyperventilating, we call that forced breathing, we need some additional muscles. For sure, for inspiration, you need the abdominal muscles for inspiration, but then you can also use the external intercostals between the ribs. And the scalenes are important as well for forced breathing for inspiration. And then for expiration for forced breathing, and this is where I was getting to this whole time, is abdominal muscles, contraction of the rectus abdominis, all right, and the oblique, internal, external oblique, and the transverse abdominis all compress the abdomen, all right, and when you compress the abdomen, then that forces the abdominal contents up into the thorax and it helps expel air. That's important for forced breathing. So that's what we mean by compression. So all of these abdominal muscles do compress the abdomen. And the additional motion of the rectus abdominis is for flexion. And so where would you find a muscle for extension of the vertebral column? Extension of vertebral column. Okay, so here's the rectus abdominis, right? And here I can see the origin and insertion, because when that contracts, your pubic bone doesn't move. Okay, your vertebral column your sternum and mandible move. So that is the insertion. And so where would you look to find a muscle that's antagonistic to the rectus abdominis? Yeah, opposite body compartments. So we're going to be looking for something that maybe says posterior trunk. Act on the back. Ooh, that's maybe a good choice. Okay, and we're going to call these the erector spinae. Erector spinae are made up of a number of these different muscles, right? So it probably doesn't really matter which one we look at. All of these, I want you to consider the erector spinae. And so when any of these contract, okay, it's not going to flex, it's going to extend. Okay, so I just want you to call these erector spinae. Okay. Okay, so that's the vertebral column, abdomen, back, face. Let's look at some muscles. Let's look on the arm first. Okay, act on the shoulder. Pectoralis major. All right, so here's pectoralis major. Coracoid process of the scapula is the insertion, the origin, anterior surfaces of the sternum. And so what does this pectoral, oh, there's pectoralis minor. I don't want minor, I want major. Shoulder, arm. All right, so in particular, let's look at the insertion. Okay, so it's lateral on the humerus near the greater tubercle on the humerus. And this flexes. So can you imagine what flexion is of the humerus or flexion at the shoulder? This is an odd motion. This is why I'm kind of picking on it right now. What's flexion? Yeah, okay, so start in anatomic position. Right, and so when you raise your hands, it's straight up in front of you like that. So here is flexion. So usually we define flexion as a decrease in angle between two bones. I don't really see that happening here. But the way that you should think of the shoulder in terms of flexion is by thinking of the hip. Right, so when you think of the hip, right, so here is a nice 180 degree angle between my thigh and my trunk, and I can reduce that angle by flexing at the hip. Right, so that's flexing. Here is extension at the hip. So do the same thing with the shoulder. Here is flexion of the shoulder. Here is extension of the shoulder. So one of the prime movers for flexion is the pectoralis major. And you can see nice. So that is flexion. Right, and then here's extension. A different muscle is necessary for extension. So you see the pectoralis right here is anterior, so where would you find a muscle for extension? Which is what? Bringing the arm back down like this. Extension. Your back. So let's see if we can find that. And does anybody know what that one is? That is the latissimus dorsi. Okay, so we're looking at, so here it is, back muscles. Let's go ahead and get some other muscles out of the way. All right, so back muscles. Origin spines of the lower thoracic vertebrae, and the insertion is going to be near the floor of the intertubercular groove, pretty close to where the insertion of the pectoralis major was. And, well, this muscle is going to shorten, right? So when you're abducted, this is an important adductor, but also when you're flexed, it's an important extensor of the arm. So it extends. All right, so now this person is in the shoulder is in a flexed position, and to bring the arm back, that is extension. I guess I have to click here. Extension, flexion, extension, flexion. So some of these muscles produce more than one kind of motion, okay? And I think it's probably pretty obvious that this is an important adductor. The pectoralis major is also an adductor. Okay, so brings your arm back like so. All right, so pectoralis major, latissimus dorsi, I really would like for you to know muscles in antagonistic pairs. That is really important. It will help you, it's actually easier to memorize things that way. Okay. Deltoid, let's look at some other muscles. Biceps brachii, four, flexion at the elbow or flexion of the forearm. Okay, so here is the biceps. Well, let's just look maybe at the origin, right? And we see that it has two origins, the supraglenoid tubercle and also the coracoid process. The long head goes between the tubercles through the intertubercular groove, okay, and inserts into the supraglenoid tubercle. And the short head goes to the coracoid process. And its major action is, okay, flexion of the arm. Yeah, because it's going across the shoulder. It also goes across the elbow, and that motion will be showed in a little bit different part of Get Body Smart. Okay. Coracobrachialis. What's nice about coracobrachialis is, again, the origin and insertion is part of the name. And here's the coracobrachialis. Kind of looks like a rope going from the coracoid process to mid-diaphysis on the humerus, which we call the brachium, so coracobrachialis. And the coracoid process here is at the origin or the insertion when this muscle contracts. Scapula usually does not move very much. All right, so this is the origin, and the insertion is the humerus. So this is an important adductor and also flexor of across the shoulder or of the arm. Okay. And since the origin is medial compared to the insertion, it also is an adductor. Okay. So pectoralis major, latissimus dorsi, coracobrachialis, all adduct to some degree. No, you don't have to be specific like that. No, you don't need to know exactly which vertebrae.
No.
Yeah, you could say transverse processes of thoracic vertebrae. You could say maybe cervical vertebrae. Some muscles are in both locations. You don't have to say which ones. Okay. Yeah. Okay, subscapularis. Okay, so you know where the subscapularis is. It's in the subscapular fossa of the scapula, and got rid of a bunch of muscles. Here it is. All right, we can look at the origin. All right, it's on the more like the medial surface of the subscapular fossa, and the insertion is the lesser tubercle of the humerus. Right, and so this is an important four. When this muscle shortens, it really doesn't adduct. If it was going to be an adductor, the insertion would have to be lower. This insertion is way too close on to the head of the humerus. So when this muscle contracts, it's just going to pull this insertion over just directly to the origin, and that causes a rotation of the humerus. Right. And we, since it's pulling the anterior part of the humerus toward midline, that's going to produce a medial rotation. And probably the best way to see that rotation is to go ahead and flex at the elbow a little bit, right? So that is a medial rotation as opposed to a lateral rotation. Right, so I do want you to know subscapularis is for rotation. A couple other muscles for rotation. Teres minor. Right, now we're not looking on the anterior side, we're going to the posterior side. And let's get some of these muscles out of here. So there's the infraspinatus, there's supraspinatus. Get those out of the way. Here is the teres minor. And since there's a minor, you could probably guess there's a teres major as well. Okay, so origin is the middle part of the lateral border of the scapula. Okay, and the insertion, once again, is near the greater tubercle of the humerus. And so this doesn't weakly adduct because the insertion would have to be lower down on the humerus to do that. So again, just like the subscapularis, this is going to cause rotation. But it's on the opposite side of the humerus, so instead of a medial rotation, it's going to be a lateral rotation. Right? So it's going to pull this posterior part of the humerus toward your back. That causes a lateral rotation. Okay. And only weakly adducts. Weakly adducts. But lateral rotation is what I want you to see for... what muscle are we looking at? I see a teres major and a teres minor. Which one causes that rotation? It's going to be the teres minor. Teres minor. What else for rotation? Supraspinatus. Let's see what we can learn about the supraspinatus. Right. And supraspinatus. Get rid of some muscles right here. So it's in the supraspinous fossa. The insertion now is the superior aspect of the greater tubercle of the humerus. And when this muscle contracts, it's going to pull this lateral edge of the humerus toward midline, and that's going to cause abduction. What's one more muscle that I want to show you? The infraspinatus. Infraspinatus. So let's get some of these other muscles out of the way. All right, so here's supraspinatus for abduction. Here's the infraspinatus. And look where the insertion is, very close to where the teres minor. Can anybody remember what the action of the teres minor was? Lateral rotation, not a medial rotation, but a lateral rotation. All right, and so the infraspinatus has the same motion, laterally rotates the shoulder. All right, so the four muscles that we just looked at, we looked at the subscapularis. And we looked at the infraspinatus. And we looked at one of the teres muscles. Which one of the teres did we look at? Yeah, teres minor. And let's see, what else did we look at? Subscapularis, infraspinatus. Ah, the, what's below the spine? Okay, that's below, above the spine. Supraspinatus. Okay, so here are four really important muscles clinically, because this group right here makes up the rotator cuff. And maybe you've heard of this region before, rotator cuff. A lot of people injure the rotator cuff, and they have great difficulty in rotating their humerus, especially a lateral rotation. All right, so if you tell somebody with a rotator cuff injury or tear, flex at the elbow like that, and then put your hand by their thumb and ask them to laterally rotate, they just can't. Or if they try, they're just going to kind of scream in agony. Right? And that's called a rotator cuff tear. So these are the four muscles that participate in the rotator cuff, and you should probably remember this as SITS, S-I-T-S. Right? And that should remind you of the muscles. Now, why are all these muscles grouped together? Well, remember that the shoulder joint right here is a synovial joint, right? Freely movable joint, but it's a synovial joint. So it has a joint capsule around it. The insertions of these three muscles are an integral part of the joint capsule of the shoulder joint. So if there's injury to any one of these muscles, right, it usually ends up in the joint capsule surrounding the head of the humerus. So these muscles, like for instance, the triceps muscle right here, you can see the insertion. And it doesn't go anywhere near the head of the humerus, so it doesn't participate in the joint capsule, but these other muscles do. The supraspinatus, infraspinatus, teres minor, right, and the subscapularis. Now, one muscle that is absent from this group, which you can easily confuse, is the teres major. Let's look at the teres major. All right, so let's get some of these muscles out of the way. Ah, and here's the teres minor. And you can see that it participates in the joint capsule, the fibrous capsule of the shoulder. But now what about the teres major? Right? It's way too inferior. It doesn't get near the joint capsule at all, so it doesn't participate in the rotator cuff. Right? And so this one now is lower on the humerus, so this is really good for adducting. So it's adducting the humerus. Okay. And since the insertion is on the anterior part of the humerus, when it contracts, it's also important for laterally or medially rotating, right? Because it's going to pull the anterior part of the humerus toward midline, a medial rotator. But not part of the rotator cuff because the insertion is way inferior to the joint capsule of the shoulder. So it's not really a rotator cuff, even though that's one of the important motions. All right, so I think that's all I want to say about the shoulder. Okay, deltoid, we could look at the deltoid really quickly. So we can see the origin. The origin is, it's sort of vast, right? Because it goes from the spine of the scapula all the way around to the clavicle. And there's a really small insertion, so this is a nice triangularly shaped muscle. And if the whole muscle contracts, that's going to cause abduction. Right, so when that muscle contracts, it's abduction. If the anterior part contracts, that's going to if the posterior part of the deltoid contracts, that's going to cause extension. If the anterior contracts, right, it's going to cause more of a flexion motion. So depending on what divisions of the deltoid are working, it can produce different motions. But the motion that I would like for you to just become familiar with is abduction, okay, for deltoid. Yeah, abduction. So the deltoid is going to be, in terms of antagonism, okay, since it's an abductor, it's going to be antagonistic to all the adductors that we talked about. Pectoralis major, latissimus dorsi, coracal brachialis, and even those teres muscles, right? They're pretty much on the opposite side of the shoulder. Okay, so that's deltoid. Okay. Let's look in another region. Act on the shoulder, act on the arm. So anterior forearm. So here we see a posterior view of the arm and the forearm, but I want to show you some muscles on the anterior side first. So what happens when we do that? Ah, good, it gets turned around. Okay, so here's pectoralis major. There's a little bit of coracal brachialis sticking out. Here is the biceps brachii. And now we're in the division of muscles that work on the forearm. We saw biceps brachii does work across the shoulder weakly, but mostly it flexes the elbow. Right, so let's look at the origin. Again, the coracoid process, the supraglenoid tubercle, and then the insertion is the radial tuberosity, right, and also a broad flat tendinous sheath that comes from the ulna. So these are the two insertions. So this is the end of the muscle that moves the most, and so it's going to flex at the elbow, like so. And that's the motion that I would like for you to know. Okay, supination probably not so important for you to know, but for flexion. All right, there is an important synergist of the biceps. And it's a muscle just deep to the biceps brachii, and that is, anybody remember what that is? Yeah, the brachialis muscle. All right, so let's take a look at the brachialis. Now, the brachialis does not work across the shoulder. It just works across the elbow. All right, so here I see brachialis, does not go up to the shoulder. And the insertion is that coronoid process and tuberosity of the ulna right here. And when that contracts, course, that flexes the forearm. And so these are nice synergistic muscles. And I would probably want you to know that the brachialis is the prime mover for forearm flexion, not the biceps brachii. All right. Now, what compartment is the brachialis in? Is it anterior or posterior? Yeah, it's anterior, so that's why it's synergistic with the biceps. When you look at a model in lab, sometimes when you have a nice lateral view of the arm, the brachialis is so big and powerful, it sort of looks like the triceps brachii. So I'll mention that to you when we get to lab, but don't mislabel the brachialis as a triceps, because it's what? It's definitely in the anterior part of the arm, even though it's deep to the biceps brachii. And usually you think, what's the muscle behind the biceps brachii? Is the triceps. Okay, but don't forget about the brachialis, that prime mover for flexion. Brachioradialis goes across the wrist, so it goes from the brachium and inserts into the styloid process of the radius, hence its name, so it's really nice and easy to remember. So here is the brachioradialis. What did we call these things above a condyle? Epicondyle or supracondylar ridges, right? You could say epicondyle, so lateral epicondyle. And from the name, how would you know that's a lateral epicondyle? Because the radius is lateral. Right, so lateral epicondyle, and then it inserts into the styloid process. And it doesn't go across the wrist, so it doesn't flex the wrist. It flexes the forearm. This is the biggest muscle in your forearm. Okay, like so. Okay, triceps. Okay, so now we're in the true posterior compartment. Okay, of the arm. So here you can see the long head going to the infraglenoid tubercle, and the lateral head going to just this posterior part of the humerus. And the insertion, all of these have a common insertion to the olecranon process. So when this muscle contracts, it pulls the olecranon process superiorly, and that extends the forearm. Okay, so if you're going to think of antagonistic muscles, what's antagonistic to the brachialis? Antagonistic to the brachialis is the triceps brachii, right? And the triceps is also antagonistic to the biceps. Let's look at some, maybe I'll show you some muscles of the wrist and hand, okay, but I think I want to show you thigh muscles first, because we haven't talked about these much at all. Okay, so here is a muscle, the psoas major and the iliacus, and how would you describe the location of that psoas muscle, psoas major and iliacus? I'm going to get some of these other muscles out of the way. Ooh, that was nice. All right, where do you find the psoas major? Here's the psoas major. Here's the iliacus. With respect to the ascoxae, how would you tell somebody where to find these muscles? Are they anterior, left, right, superior, posterior, or what? Yeah, they're anterior. Okay, so what was the motion of the rectus abdominis, which is anterior to your vertebral column? It causes flexion. Okay, and so use that kind of thinking to tell me what the motion is of the iliacus and the psoas. It's anterior, kind of like the rectus abdominis, but it's not in the abdominal region. It works across the hip. And so it's anterior. It's going to pull this lesser trochanter of the femur superiorly and anteriorly, and what do we call that motion when we go like that? That's flexion of the hip. So the iliopsoas is the prime mover for flexion at the hip. We got it right there. So there's flexion. All right, so where would you want to find some antagonistic muscles or an antagonistic to the iliopsoas muscle? The posterior hip. All right, so let's see if I can find something in the posterior hip. Okay, let's look at gluteus maximus. All right, so now we're looking at the posterior side of the pelvis, right? Because we were just looking at the anterior side, so now we've turned around and we're looking at the posterior side. And the origin is just the ilium, like the lateral part of, the medial part of the ilium and parts of the sacrum. The insertion is that gluteal tuberosity. Oh, you didn't have to know that in lab, okay? But it's on the superior diaphysis of the femur. When this contracts, what happens? It extends the hip. All right, so what's a nice antagonistic pair working across the hip in terms of extension and flexion? Flexion would be iliopsoas. Yeah, iliopsoas, and extension would be gluteus maximus. Okay. All right, so that's across the hip. Let's look at some antagonism that works across the knee. Okay, so what flashed before our eyes? Well, that psoas major just disappeared, then the iliacus is probably going to go away. Nice. That's for flexion, but we want to talk about muscles that work across the knee. So let's get rid of some of these others. Right here. All right, so here is one with an origin of the anterior inferior iliac spine. And the insertion is into the patella, but it continues via the patellar ligament into the tibial tuberosity. So really you can consider the insertion of the rectus femoris, the tibial tuberosity. When this muscle contracts, right, it's going to pull on the tibial tuberosity and it's going to extend at the knee. So it's going to produce that kicking motion. The rectus femoris is part of the quadriceps femoris muscle system. So there's going to be a vastus lateralis, medialis, and there's going to be a muscle deep to the rectus femoris. They all have a common insertion into the patella and then finally into the tibial tuberosity. So all of those muscles are going to be extensors. Let's see if we can find some of these. Vastus lateralis. Okay, so here's the vastus lateralis, part of the quadriceps muscles. All right, but the origin is no longer the ilium, but it's part of the femur. The insertion is the tibial tuberosity. And again, that's going to cause extension of the leg or extension at the knee. Same thing. Vastus medialis. All right, so here's the vastus medialis. Remember, we just saw the vastus lateralis. And again, it's going to be the insertion is going to be into the tibial tuberosity via the patellar ligament from the patella. And again, that's going to be an extensor. Okay, and I'm not going to show you the intermedius because it's just deep to the rectus femoris and it has the same insertion point. Okay, so this is extension of the knee in the anterior thigh. Where would you want to look for some muscles that flex the knee? Yeah, posterior. All right, so we look at posterior leg. Let's look at this one first. Biceps femoris. All right, so the biceps, the origin is the ischial tuberosity, so it actually goes across the hip, but it also works across the knee, and the insertion is the head of the fibula. Okay, and so when that muscle contracts, right, it's going to flex the knee. Oh, but what else is it going to do? Since it works across the hip on that posterior side, it's also can be, it can also work as an extensor. But if you're going to remember one thing, just say flexion of the knee, like that. The biceps femoris, it belongs to a group just like the quadriceps, but there aren't four muscles, there are three muscles back over here, generally called the hamstrings. And the other two muscles, so I tell you what do we want to look at? Where does the insertion, it inserts into the fibula, and is that medial or lateral? Lateral. So the biceps femoris, if you're going to find it, is going to be located more laterally, okay, on the posterior thigh. It's going to be the most lateral of that, of the hamstrings. So let's look at some of the other ones. Let's look at the semimembranosus. Semimembranosus will have the same action. It's in the same body compartment, which means it's going to flex the leg or flex the knee. So here is that biceps femoris that we just looked at. But medially is going to be the semimembranosus. And it's also going to flex the knee, okay, because it comes from the ischial tuberosity, but now it goes onto the head of the tibia, not fibula, so this is the medial muscle. That's one other component of the hamstring. And then the last one is going to be the semitendinosus. And I'm going to get to the final point really soon with this group. All right, so what do we see right here? A whole bunch of things. So here is the semimembranosus. Here's the biceps. And then superior, right on top of the semimembranosus, is the semitendinosus. And it's called tendinosus because it has this really long tendon right here that's easily seen on our models upstairs. All right, so these are the three muscles that make up the hamstrings. Biceps, semitendinosus, semimembranosus. And the way that I remember this is if we come from a medial direction, which one of these muscles do we bump into first? Some people memorize it from lateral. I have a tendency, I like to memorize it from approaching the hamstrings medially. What muscle is this right here? That is the, let's see if I can get it back. Where did I go? That is the semimembranosus. Semimembranosus is actually a lot stronger, a lot bigger muscle than the semitendinosus. That's the first one that you bump into. All right, and it just so happens that this is the medial muscle, and how many M's are there in semimembranosus? There's a lot of M's. That's sort of how I remember this one, okay? And if I can remember that, then I easily remember that the biceps femoris is lateral, and then right in between the two is going to be the semitendinosus. But it will be easy in lab to identify the semitendinosus. All right, so the hamstrings are antagonistic to what muscles? So these are in the posterior thigh. You just look to the anterior thigh, and remember we looked at the quadriceps muscles, right, for extension at the knee. Let's see what we can do anterior thigh. Okay, so in terms of the muscles in the thigh, we looked at some extensors, we looked at some flexors, and there's another important group of muscles that are located medially on the thigh. These are all going to be adductors. So let's look at this first one right here. So all of these muscles are adductors. All of these have an origin on the pubic bone, or the ramus of a pubic bone, and the insertion is going to be on the diaphysis of the femur. So when this muscle contracts, it's going to adduct. Let's see, these are all important adductors, medial thigh. So there's adductor magnus, adductor longus. Right, so here is adductor longus. Magnus is underneath or posterior to the longus, but you can see it's very extensive. It's the strongest of the adductors. And what else do you have to know? Longus, magnus, maybe you have to know something about pectineus. Here's pectineus, that's also an important adductor. So any of these muscles over here in the medial thigh, you're going to call these adductors of one kind or another. Well, if you want to find an abductor, where would you look? Yeah, other side of the femur, like lateral femur. Okay, so we're going to be looking over here for an abductor. And we don't have very many strong muscles for abducting. We have a lot of, as you see, we have a lot of strong adductors because in order to stand up erect, we need to keep our legs together. Otherwise, right, if we don't have any of these muscles, we'd fall right between our thighs. So those muscles have to be really strong. Okay, tensor fascia lata. Here it is right here. Lateral, and you can see the origin is the anterior iliac crest. The insertion is a lateral condyle. All the way down here to the head of the tibia. All right, so here is a broad, flat tendinous sheath that you can hardly see. Right, when you have a model in the lab, you'll be able to see it. So this muscle, when it contracts, actually works on the tibia way down over here. It also works across the hip. So when this muscle contracts, it is, abduction. And that's really about the only muscle that abducts. And you can see how small that is compared to all those big, powerful adductors that you had.
So the muscle on the abductor is not stronger than the abductor.
Okay, say that again.
So this muscle.
Okay, yeah, this one right here.
It's for the abductor. It's not strong.
It's not strong at all. Yeah, because it's very, very small. And we don't do much when we abduct. Okay, we need a lot of strength when we abduct, bring our legs together, because that holds up our whole body weight. Okay, but we don't really use abduction very much, so it's just a small muscle. Like, that kind of reminds me of muscles of mastication, and that would be, a depressor that depresses the mandible. We don't have very many strong muscles that do that, but we have a lot of strong muscles that elevate the mandible, right, for chewing motion. Same thing here for this abductor and adductors. Okay. All right. We looked at the psoas already. Let's look at a couple of these. Tibialis anterior. So we're going to be looking in the anterior leg. Here I see the tibialis anterior. And it inserts, it's in the anterior compartment, and so it's going to pull your toes up off the ground. What do we call that motion that pulls our toes up off the ground? That is dorsiflexion. Oh, let's get rid of some of these right here. All right, so here's the tibialis anterior, and when that contracts, it's going to, you could think of this as elevating the foot, but we call that dorsiflexion, right, at the ankle. It's not extending the digits, right? It's really working only on the ankle because the insertion is not up on the digits anywhere. All right, so if this is dorsiflexion in the anterior compartment, where would we find some muscles for plantar flexion? Posterior. Let's see what we can find for posterior. And would you think the posterior compartment for plantar flexion are stronger muscles or the same as that anterior tibialis or weaker? Yeah, in the posterior compartment stronger, ones in the anterior compartment weaker, because when you plantar flex, you lift your whole body weight up off the ground. All right, so the prime mover for plantar flexion is the gastrocnemius. Okay, so here is gastrocnemius. It does work across the knee, right? So on the epicondyles, both medial and lateral epicondyles is the origin. And the insertion goes via the calcaneal tendon into the calcaneus, which is the most posterior part of the foot. When that gastrocnemius contracts, it elevates the calcaneus. It pulls the calcaneus superiorly, which means that that then pushes your toes into the ground, or the anterior part of your foot into the ground, which is what we call plantar flexion. Okay, so the gastrocnemius sort of reminds me of the biceps and brachialis. So what can you tell me about the biceps and the biceps brachii and the brachialis? Yeah, they're synergists, right? They're in the same body compartment. One is superficial and one is deep, right? And the gastrocnemius kind of reminds me of the biceps brachii. And there's another muscle that reminds me of the brachialis, and that's called the soleus. The soleus is going to be deep to the gastrocnemius, same body compartment, so you would say it's a synergist. Right? And we see plantar flexes. Where do we have it? All right, let's get rid of a bunch of these muscles. Where's gastrocnemius at? Whoa, where is it? Okay, here's gastrocnemius. And then deep to the gastrocnemius, right, is the soleus. See if I can get just the soleus. Ah, here's the soleus. Remember, gastrocnemius is here and here. And then here is the soleus. It has the same insertion, the calcaneus via the calcaneal tendon, and it also plantar flexes. All right, so gastrocnemius and soleus are nice synergists and antagonistic to the anterior tibialis.
So the soleus also, the origin also has two locations?
One. Let's see if I can look at it. It's not on the epicondyles of the femur, okay? It's really just on the tibia. Yeah. Okay. So, oh, and there's I guess there's a part on the head of the fibula as well. Okay. Yeah. Does it really? I guess you could maybe think there's two heads right there. I don't really consider this two separate heads like the gastrocnemius. Well, it continues from the fibula down onto the tibia, but that's really all just one origin. But for the gastrocnemius, it was two separate origins on either side of the femur. Okay, so that's just one origin right here.
So that's
really
on the tibia?
Yep, that's on the tibia. So those are the important muscles for antagonism that you should be aware of. What we haven't talked about are extensors and flexors of digits, right? In your hand, for instance, and in your foot. So let's see if we can find maybe a couple of these. This is the most important extensor, right? Because it just goes to the big toe. So here is the extensor hallucis longus. And when you see that term hallucis, that means going to the big toe. If you see a term that says pollicis, that means it's going to the thumb. So pollicis is thumb, hallucis is big toe. And the insertion is the distal phalanx of the big toe. So it goes all the way to the distal phalanx. And it's in an anterior compartment, so it's going to straighten out the big toe, which we call extension. Well, let's just extend. Ah, there's extension. Extension of the big toe. Where would we find a flexor of the big toe? Right, because we were looking anteriorly, it would be posterior. Flexor hallucis longus. Okay, so here is flexor hallucis longus, and okay, these will, it doesn't flex the ankle, but it flexes the digits. And again, it just inserts into the number one phalanx, which is the big toe. Similarly, in the forearm, flexor digitorum. Now, what part of the forearm are we looking at here? Is it posterior or anterior? Oh, does it say anywhere on here? I would like it to say something. It's not obvious. Okay, but you know what? In anatomic position, maybe you could see from here. Okay, I see like the palm of the hand here. Can you kind of see the palm of the hand? So that's anterior. So this is an anterior forearm. And the insertion, where do we have the insertion? Middle phalanx, phalanges, digits 2 through 5. But not number 1, because number 1 would be a flexor pollicis. I don't know if I have an example of that or not. So these are going to flex, okay, the digits. Not the wrist, but flex the digits. Where would we find a muscle to extend the digits? Posterior forearm. Extensor carpi, extensor digitorum. Okay. And now, these are going to be on the posterior parts of the phalanges. Extends, fingers, this is what I want to see. Extends the digits. Okay, like so. Okay, so I think that's really all I want to show you with these muscles. Well, I showed you in terms of antagonistic pairs. What's the easiest way to appreciate muscles that work by antagonism? Just opposite body compartments. Okay? Just opposite body compartments. And so those are the things that, if I was going to pick on something on the lecture test, it would be that. Or the muscles that we talked about specifically in the lecture notes last time. What muscles did we talk about specifically in lecture notes last time?
The tricep and the biceps.
Triceps, biceps, sternocleidomastoid, rectus femoris. Maybe there was one more. Here. Occipital frontalis. Yeah, sternocleidomastoid, rectus abdominis, biceps and triceps, and gastrocnemius. So you should know everything about these muscles. So you should know origin, insertion, action, synergists, and antagonists. Yeah, well, for the practicum too, you have to know all that stuff. Plus its location on a mannequin. For the practicum. But you have a couple weeks for that. Yeah, and anything in the study guide, and specifically what we talked about today, those antagonistic pairs of muscles. This is the one